I'm delighted to welcome to the Radio Cafe Ofelia Ortega Suarez. She's a member of the Cuban National Assembly. She's a professor of theology and ethics at the Evangelical Theological Seminary in Matanzas, Cuba. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be with you today. Thank you.
It's great to have you, especially since there's so much focus on Cuba in the news today because of the changing relationship with the United States. I think a lot of people here in the United States don't really understand how the government of Cuba works because there's one president forever and ever. So how does the rest of it work? You can't vote for president, but can you vote for everything else? How does it function?
We have elections every year, and we have election from the local community, and we have election too for the popular assembly every 5 years. Then I was elected the 5 years, and then I was reelected for another 5 years, and it's only 10 years. And what I want to tell you is that I don't receive any salary from the Cuban government. This means our work is just voluntary work. I was elected for the rural community nearby the theological seminary where I'm working. And it was the women who proposed my name to have more women as participants in the National Assembly.
So what does the National Assembly do? What is your role? What is your responsibility?
My responsibility as member of the National Assembly is really to work very hard in the rural area that I have been assigned. Is the rural area is Calimete. The people there produce sugar, milk, and rice. And then my time is really to be with them. I don't have any budget to propose to them. The only thing that I could do is just to visit them, know what are their needs, and then try that to connect them with the people that could really resolve their problem in the different ministries of the country. And I need to go there regularly to know what happened to the community. I have been elected for a community of 26,000 inhabitants. Then I need to respond to them. They are the people that really need to tell me what they need, what are the problems that they have. And then I need, my main task is to connect them with the different ministries that could resolve many of the problems that they have.
Now, what are their needs? What are their problems?
Usually the problems that they have is that, of course, now there are two key words that the government is telling in Cuba. One is decentralization, and the other is local development. These two work as essential for the future of the Cuban people, because until now the government has been very much centralized. Then it means all this sugar, rice, and milk that they produce are going to the upper government, a provincial level or national level, to really take care of all the problems that the people have in education, because we have free education, we have free public health. Then this will cover many of the needs of the people over there. But then the local community need to develop, and now is the country will be more decentralized. This means the local community will have more opportunity that part of the production will be kept there to the well-being of many of the people that live there, and at the same time to produce more things for local development. This means these two will be part of the continuation now of the changes that are happening in Cuba now.
So from a government perspective, decentralization and local development, that makes sense. But from the point of view of these 26,000 people, when you go to them and say, what are your problems?
Yes.
They don't say, we want decentralization. Like, what do they say? Like, what are their actual living problems?
For example, they have problem of transportation. And then we really, there is a real problem of transportation. Then we really organize the way that a bus that is going to other provinces could pass by nearby them, to collect them and to go to, because they didn't have a bus to go out. Then this is the kind of work that we are doing. You see, if there is a bus that is passing by a little bit far away, how they could stop there and collect the people? Transportation is one problem that we have. Housing is another problem that we have. Then we try to see how the people could develop their houses. And then the problem that we are doing is to try to see how they could have help from the banks to really to have credit in the banks in a way that they could buy the materials that they need to reconstruct the houses or build new houses. Then housing, transportation, and at the same time, sometimes caminos, roads. Some of the rural communities that they are far away from the center, they don't have good roads to go to school or to go to hospital or to go outside. Then our main task is to see how we could really build these roads in a way that they could be out. These are some of the problems that they have, transportation, housing, roads, and many of the things we need to deal with. And of course, in local development now, what we are trying to do is they could develop fishing. Because there is a possibility not only to have rice, milk, and sugar, but really to have a place that we could produce fishing that will be developed, that will help them to look for local development. And this is what we are doing now, fishing production now.
Now, we've had for many, many years, for decades, an economic embargo, the United States against the nation of Cuba, but the rest of the world has been able to trade freely with Cuba. Is that correct? I mean, what is the influence of other nations' economies and their relationships with the nation of Cuba?
Now, during the last 20 years, we increased very much the relationship with countries in Latin America, and of course, we receive help from an exchange of with Venezuela, with Brazil, with other countries that are helping Cuba really to be better in the whole question of commerce. And this has happened. But it's happened too because Cuba is helping Latin America, the Caribbean, Africa, Asia, and many other countries with medical doctors that are going there for social service and teachers that are going there to really to do illiteracy work. To help people to write and to read, especially the people in their body. Then the relationship is very much now mutuality. It's a kind of mutual. It's not only that the Latin American, the Caribbean and other countries are helping Cuba. Cuba is helping them too. And it's a kind of mutuality or supporting each other that is happening now.
One of the things that for me, as a frequent, not so much lately, but I used to go frequently to visit Cuba, and from the point of view of Cubans, economic development is really very necessary.
Yes.
I mean, there's huge problems that could be solved by more economic development. But from the point of view of an American, it's easy to see how unspoiled the country is, how intact the rural areas can be, the ocean isn't completely polluted by overdevelopment. Now, if you have free relationships and economic relationships with the United States, what are Cubans and what is the Cuban government thinking about in protecting their environment?
I think your question is very important. Environment is fundamental for us. For example, I am now the leader of an ecological center there, like we're really working for the land, and there are many people doing urban and suburban agriculture, ecological agriculture. Organic agriculture. Then, for us, we don't want to lose that. But at the same time, we don't want to lose the sense of community that we have. We don't like individualism. And then we said, even in the relationship, we hope that we will keep the sense of community and sharing that we have in Cuba. Not only environment, but at the same time, community and sharing the resources that we have. And not only to be so individualist that we don't, we said, the business, what happened, the problem of other people is not my problem. We said in Cuba, my problem is related with the problems of others. And then we want to keep that. Of course, we have some fear. I need to confess to you that sometimes, exactly in the future, we hope that the relation will be very good. We need that. But at the same time, that we could keep, as you say, the sense of we have that our beaches will be continuing, not polluted, that the tourist enterprise will be really taking care too of what is happening in the country in terms of taking care of the land and so on. But of course, we need a lot of development of our agriculture because there are a lot of land in Cuba that needs to be cultivated and planted. And we hope that this relationship will help us to really to have the whole country with a kind of agriculture developer that will help us and the relationship with the United States to build that.
It seems like Cuba could be agriculturally self-sufficient. In other words, there's enough land to feed every person in Cuba.
Exactly.
Is that what's happening now? Does Cuba feed itself?
Not now. We have a great percentage of import. And then this is what we want really to try to stop as much as we could, to import less and to produce more, especially from the land. We have a lot of land that is not cultivated. That sometimes you pass and pass and pass kilometers and kilometers of land not cultivated. Then we want to, all this land will be cultivated in a way that we don't need to import so much. And at the same time that we could export. If we have good wood cultivation, we could not import and then to have exportation to many of our goods. And we hope that this could happen in the future. We have lack of probably equipment or human resources maybe to help us in the whole development. Thank you.
Well, I mean, it's also, I mean, historically, there were slave plantations in Cuba. And so the history, like changing from a plantation system and then a cash crop system to an individual, like subsistence and cash crop farmer system, that's a big change.
Yes, it's a big change. Now, according with the law, one of the law in the country, then institutions and churches and people could ask a piece of land to plant. The only thing is that this land belongs to you. If you plant and share with the community and with all the what you are planted. And then if you don't do that, if your land is not really planted in a good well, then this will pass to the government again. This
right.
means, I don't know the name and economy of that, but it's a kind of usufruct. This means the land you could use the land forever. If you plant and share with the community.
Okay.
But if you don't plant and you don't share, then this means the land will go back to the government. It's the same Aboriginal feeling that the land belongs to you. You plant and really share with other people what you are doing. Yeah. For your family, but for the community too. And to sell what you are planting too.
Now, are there, at this point, kind of farmers markets in Cuba?
Yes. It's increased now. And now it has been a good disposition and law that the farmers could take directly to the hotels what they plant. This is very good because the hotels could receive fresh vegetables. And then the peasants could receive better money. Then this is coming up very, very in a very fruitful way, and I think this will really something that. And the churches are really having land now.
So tell us, you are with the Presbyterian Church. What is the role of? I mean, Protestantism is a fairly small percentage of the religion in Cuba. Is that correct?
It is, but it's changing. Now, what is happening in Cuba is that many of the Protestant churches, not only Presbyterians, we have about 29 denominations in Cuba. And then all these churches, Protestant churches and Evangelical churches, they have what we call house churches. We have no more than 3,000 house churches. This means the mission outreach is going out very well. And the Catholic Church, too, has house churches for Bible study. And this means the missionary outreach now of the Protestant churches is great in a way that, I don't know, maybe in some years we cannot say that it's only a Catholic country, but because the Protestants are growing there very much indeed.
Well, it's such an interesting history because after the Cuban Revolution, atheism was really promoted by the government, but churches just didn't go away.
No, we stayed there. I was there as leader of the Christian Education Program of the Presbyterian Church for 60s, 70s, and 80s, the three difficult decades. And of course, in the 90s began what we call the special period. That was difficult too. Then we stay. And sometimes we stay with few people in the churches. But we say, we are here.
What was that like, that period?
I will say that it was a period that we used a lot of imagination and creativity to maintain the churches open, to tell to the government, we are here and we are not going to move from here. Then in some way, it was in 1984 when began the changes, when Jesse Jackson, as a senator of the United States, went to Cuba, and he told to Fidel Castro, I am a Christian, I need to go to church. And then he entered into the Methodist Church. I remember that day, there were more than 1,000 people. And then Fidel entered too. And then the people around in the neighborhood said, oh, Fidel entered into the local church. Then it's not so, it's more convenient to do that. It's the president is entering into a local church. And then it was a great service. More than 1,000 people were there. And Fidel was there behind the pulpit. And then afterwards, Fray Beto, the Dominican Catholic from Brazil, went to Cuba in 1985, and then he wrote the book Fidel and Religion. And this book was a book that was sold, more than 1 million people in Cuba buy this book. This was the beginning of the changes, a lot of changes in relation between church and state in Cuba. And we are happy that Jesse Jackson did that. And now, of course, we have had the visit of two popes. And now we are going to visit of Pope Francis in September. We are preparing Protestant people and Catholic people. We are preparing the visit of the Pope, not only Catholic, but Protestant people to receive Pope Francis, because he was one of the persons that really helped us to have relationship with the United States. I don't know what he did, but he did. Thank you.
Unfortunately, it's time to go, but I want to thank you so much for being with us. Ofelia Ortega Suarez, who is a member of the Cuban National Assembly, and she's a professor of theology and ethics at the Evangelical Theological Seminary in Matanzas, Cuba, which is a center of all kinds of culture, including a very strong Afro-Cuban cultural tradition.
And it's called the Atenas of Cuba.
The Athens of Cuba.
The
yeah.
Athens of Cuba is called.
Matanzas. Ofelia, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.